Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
On this Super Sunday, Dean Richards Sunday Morning with our Weekend Health feature. What's going on to keep you good and healthy? We'll find out from Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off with something that I was reading, that we are having a flu surge right now, a second wave of the flu that's running through. And, it, you know, probably you know two, three people. I'm talking with, you know, the listeners. You probably know two or three people who are hit hard with it. I do. If you look at the statistics, that seems to be what's going on right now, right?
It's been a brutal season, and I think almost a record-setting season. The number of visits to outpatients for flu-like symptoms is off the charts. Clinic folks are saying it's the highest they've seen in two decades. I can tell you this week, according to the CDC, a third of flu tests came back positive. That's a very high number. January of last year, for comparison, it was in the 20s. So we're at a very high rate of disease, and there's some significant impacts. You know, we've had 24 million illnesses in the United States this season. 13,000 people have died, and 57 children. That's equivalent to the city of LaGrange Park just disappearing off the map. Wow. So there's some significant burden. It's out there.
So how do we prevent the flu from being spread? Is it mostly washing your hands, or do we get the masks involved again? What should we be doing?
Yeah, you know, first of all, immunization is the number one protection, right? You wouldn't go into a battle in a war zone without body armor, and the flu vaccine is a big piece of body armor. It's not too late to go and get it, and so I highly recommend looking into that if you haven't already. That being said, masking is a great way to limit illness. The flu spreads in respiratory droplets, and it can spread on surfaces. You know, if you touch a child who's got a runny nose and then you rub your eye, potentially you're inoculating yourself. So hand washing, masking, particularly if you've been sick, maybe you never got tested, which is fine. But if you're having a cough or runny nose or sore throat, not a bad idea. Just throw on a mask. And protect people around you.
I'm trying to remember what the rule was when it came to masking. We went over this a million times at the beginning of COVID, that when you wear a mask, you are protecting others from catching what you've got, not so much protecting yourself, what somebody may be giving you. Is that correct?
It's both. No, I think it's both.
Okay.
When I... when I'm working in the emergency department, you know, the last thing I want to do is come home and get sick. I want my days off to be healthy and enjoyable. So I throw on a mask, and I think it helps, and many of us do. So it certainly can help spread of disease. Many people who even have been vaccinated, there's a higher likelihood that then you'd be a carrier and be asymptomatic, meaning that you're carrying around the virus, you just don't know it. So it's not a terrible idea.
Do we need the K95 masks still? Is that still the greatest line of protection, mask-wise? Or are the blue masks that you see everywhere, are those sufficient?
You know, I still think there's a ton of debate out there about what pathogens are truly protected by the K95. I think it's pretty clear from most of the recent research and talking to some of the infectious disease experts that I know that just the droplet mask should be fine. That's very effective, and it's a cheap, easy way to protect yourself and others.
Okay. Now, we had talked about the neurovirus. That's different than this influenza virus that we're talking about now, right?
Sure. Yeah, the neurovirus affects the gastrointestinal tract. Hand washing is critical. Mask wearing less so. And again, the soap and water, as opposed to the hand sanitizer, the alcohol doesn't do anything to it, whereas soap washes it away, doesn't kill it. And so if you want to really kill it on surfaces, bleach, create a weak bleach solution, or get some bleach wipes for those surfaces in your home, like countertops and doorknobs.
Okay. I wanted to also ask you about bird flu. That is being attributed to why egg prices are so high, because they're having to destroy so many chickens because of the bird flu.
Right.
Is there a risk of humans getting the bird flu?
So, yes, theoretically. I will tell you that I think experts will have indicated that you really want your eggs cooked all the way through, and For our house, we're not doing any runny eggs right now, as much as I love it. I just think it's not worth the risk. The risk is low, but it's not zero. And I would say the same for raw milk. You really want to be drinking pasteurized milk, meaning that it's been cooked, heated to an appropriate temperature before it was bottled, to kill that virus, because it is showing up in dairy milk.
I was surprised to learn that eggs are not pasteurized. I mean, now it's a whole different story with eggs. You know, if you've got $115 to pay for a dozen eggs, that's a whole other thing. They're so ridiculously expensive now. But I was surprised that eggs are not routinely pasteurized. I was looking for specifically pasteurized eggs to use in a recipe that did not require cooking, and I have the hardest time finding those things, and it just seems like, why wouldn't we be pasteurizing everything that's up for human consumption? Just seems like the safer route to take.
Yeah, I assume that there was some lobby involved in that decision making, but I don't know for sure. And I also don't know if it, if it's challenging. It's probably expensive, and it may be, that may be a part of it as well. I've read that less than 3% of all eggs are pasteurized, and they're marked with a P, by the way, when they are. So that's for what it's worth. The USDA website doesn't have a whole lot of information on it, and I'm just not sure.
Yeah.
A great point.
You can sort of self-pasteurize by, putting eggs in boiling water, bringing them only up to 150 degrees. I think that's what the temperature is. Look it up just to be sure. But it's you bring the eggs up to a certain temperature without beginning to soft boil or hard boil them. And it, in theory, is supposed to destroy any bacteria. So if you're affluent enough to purchase a dozen eggs,
right,
that would be the safe way to do it. Somebody at the 708 area code says, because the flu has been so prevalent this year, what would be the biggest contributing factor to that? Why do you think we're having a banner year?
I don't have a good answer for that. And, my instinct is to say that these things go in cycles. COVID has been, still out there, but way less impactful compared to prior years. So someone's got to be the heavyweight. And in some years it's been RSV, and some years it's been COVID, and this year it happens to be flu. That's my best guess. The other thing I can tell you, Dean, is that these viruses like to swap genetic material frequently. I've seen folks, and I mean every day that I work, by frequently, you see folks come in, they're not feeling good, you run a test, and they're sick with multiple viruses. They've got flu and they've got rhinovirus, so they've got COVID and they've got RSV. And so what happens in the body is the viruses will exchange genetic material, and then the machinery that powered one virus is now in the other. And so that may be a piece of it as well.
Well, that may partially answer this next question, which we have multiple comments on our text line of people saying, I got my flu shot and I still got influenza. I still got sick anyway. Does that play into what you were just talking about? How the viruses, kind of morph and change and exchange. So what you thought you were fighting with a vaccine, you're no longer fighting because it went over to another virus.
Well, it's true. And I'll just make the point that vaccines are not meant to prevent 100% illness. Now, they can. But what they're really meant to do is attenuate illness. Excuse me. So that if you are exposed to a virus, let's say the flu, and you have a vaccine, your body is going to more effectively fight it off than if you hadn't been. And you're less prone to spread those viral particles than you might have been. And so rather than infecting 100 people, you might infect 5. And rather than ending up in an intensive care unit with a breathing tube, you ended up going to the primary care clinic and getting some cough medicine. So that's truly the heart of it right there. It lowers the risk of death and severe illness, and it lowers the likelihood that you're going to be a super spreader.
708 area code asks, is it too late now for me to get a flu shot?
Not at all. Not at all. It's still at an extremely high level. We're still in the same strains that we've been vaccinated for in terms of the vaccine target. Go get it. It really is unlikely to hurt, and it can only help.
How do you know when you should seek a medical care if you think you have the flu? Because really, isn't it just a matter of you got to wait it out? Do you need to run to the doctor? The doctor's offices are so busy anyway. If you get this, how do you know when you can't just drink fluids and get rest?
In a child, particularly in a young child, breathing difficulties or rapid breathing would be a red flag to go get help immediately and, in fact, come to the emergency department. We're very good with those types of illnesses. And so if you're, as an adult, if you're short of breath, you can't catch your breath, or you're becoming more short of breath, that's a sign that you need to get looked at. Likewise, significant chest pain, and I'm not talking about little aches and pains, but pain in the center of your chest, or pain that won't go away, or pain that's instigated by activity, that's a good reason to go and get looked at. And now in the older crowd, in grandma, it might be that she's, feeling a little confused or feeling lightheaded when she stands up. That's probably a good reason to go get looked at, because dehydration or other concerns could be a part of it.
Okay, very good. The advice that you normally get is drink plenty of fluids, get as much rest as you possibly can. How much rest is enough rest? I know that I know that I am terribly sleep deprived because of my bizarre schedule. And, you always hear, you must get 8 hours of sleep. I can't even remember the last time I got a full 8 hours of sleep.
Right. Right. Well, I think what we're seeing, there's been a lot of research lately on sleep, and it's still kind of a little bit of a black box, I think, for science. What I know from what I've read in the research, really 7 hours is kind of the cutoff for adults, that really, in most groups of adults that have been looked at, those that are getting less than 7 hours tend to suffer negative side effects. And that can be everything from stress to an increase in cardiovascular disease risk. So it's not small potatoes here. The key that I've seen over and over again is that they're telling you want to have things be consistent. Go to bed around the same time and wake up around the same time. The last piece of it is try and get to bed before 1 a.m. For whatever reason, in terms of light acting on the brain and circadian rhythms, where your body and brain are trying to adjust to day and night, that 1 a.m. mark seems to be the cutoff. And I'm talking about adults. Kids need a lot more sleep. And then when you tie in the illness piece, what I like to say is when you're sick, get as much rest as you feel like you need. Because your body's trying to tell you, hey, I need to take a break and regenerate here.
Yeah, yeah. I I've tried some of those sleeping aids, and I hate them. The ones that are supposed to knock you out, because you wind up just feeling groggy for days. To me, it makes things worse. People have said that I should use melatonin. Is that a good sleep aid? It's more natural, right?
It can be. Some folks swear by it, and in some studies it's performed well, but it also can screw up your REM cycle, and I would put a warning out there for children. It's not heavily regulated. It kind of falls into the supplement category of the U.S. Medical market.
Right.
And so you may think you're getting, 1 milligram. I'm just throwing a number out there. I don't know. But you may think you're getting 1 milligram, but it's actually 5 or vice versa. So use caution with kids. With adults, I've seen people who swear by it and other folks who felt like it just made their sleep worse.
Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Medicine's Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Super Bowl Sunday, Doc. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Dean. Take care.